Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler. Brought to you by this local station and its sponsors. And presented everywhere on the air and online by Paul Everett's RV Country. With 8 locations in 5 western states.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and what has been an entertaining, at times very heavy, and informative journey with Richard Morris, a recipient of the Bronze Star and veteran of both World War II and the Korean War. For more than 30 years, this Iowa native has made his home in San Luis Obispo, California, where Hometown Heroes airs every Saturday at 2 on affiliate KVEC. That's 920 on your AM dial if you find yourself on California's Central Coast. We heard him share so powerfully about his experience at the Dachau concentration camp and the burden of recurring nightmares he's carried over the 7 decades since. And you had another unforgettable encounter at the end of the war in Europe.
In Germany, right after the war ended, our company was sent to a small village right on the edge of the Alps, and it had been a primitive type of ski resort. When we pulled guard duty on the crossroads outside of that little village, the village was called Repolding. On the outside, where there would be road crossings, we posted like 2 guys, and we would build a little fire there. We just have to stay during whatever shift of guard duty we had to play. Pretty soon, Germans were coming to us asking if we'd like souvenirs for food. And so I got a real nice camera. It was probably the most advanced thing at the time. But anyways, the kind that folded open and had the lens out front, and they had even a remote control for pulling the shutter. And I got the camera, and then the guy came by the next couple of days, said, "Would you like some film?" And I said, "Sure, I'd like some film." I gave him some more oranges and apples. I got enough film. I began to take pictures. And then I said to someone in town, where do you take pictures to get them developed? And he said, "In that German farmhouse out there on the side where the barn is, there's a guy that develops pictures." So I go walking out there by myself, which is a terrible thing to do. We were always told to go 2x2 and carry a weapon. So I got out there and I went in, and there was a big German, a burly guy that looked like a butcher, but he was working on a table in kind of the back of that barn space, and he had a counter up here. So anyway, I finally said, "Will you develop my pictures?" And he said, "Yes." And I was able to understand he meant to come back tomorrow and I'll have the pictures for you. So I went back tomorrow by myself again, and he was at the other side working, washing something. Beside this counter was a huge drum. I think it was probably 4 feet off the ground, but it was moving slowly and it was heated. And on it was covered with a whole bunch of pictures. And so I moved over and I looked at it. I thought, "My God, that looks like Hitler." And as a matter of fact, it was Hitler and the woman he married and the 2 people they had as witnesses when they were in the bunker and got married. Of course, I had no idea that where Hitler actually died. I thought, well, he must be in this area after developing pictures for him. So the guy saw me looking at the pictures and he started running for the other door that went into the house. I took my rifle down. I said, "Stop. I want my pictures." So he came over and he handed my pictures, and we had German script at that time, a little like Monopoly money. I started giving him some money. He said, "No, I don't want any money. You can have the pictures." And I thought, if I leave this building, it's a good chance I will be shot for what I've seen. So I ran back to the camp, our captain's headquarters. The officers were all gone, and the sergeant listened to me, and he said, "Do you think this is real?" I said, "Yeah. If you want to go out, you may find the pictures." He said, "I'm not going out there." I said, "Well, then why don't you call our captain and tell him what we have and see what they think?" In about 20 minutes, down the road comes our captain and our lieutenants and then the major and then the colonel and then the general. I tell them what I've seen. And they say, "Take us out there." And I thought, "Oh, I'll be in the front. They'll kill me for sure." So I took them out, and finally we got about 100 feet from the door, and I said, "I'm not going in there." So the guys with all the ammunition jumped up and went in. That's the last I heard about that. When I arrived in New York Harbor at one of the main piers, I was getting off the ship. The boys on the dock were yelling, "Extra, extra, last picture of Hitler alive," and A-bomb dropped in Japan. Those two things were on the front page of the New York Times. And I grabbed the paper and I thought, that is my picture. That's the picture I should have grabbed. Anyway, that's how things sometimes happen. You find it's a small world after all.
So you're pretty confident, though, that the photo you saw on that newspaper when you got into New York City was the very same photo you'd seen in Germany?
I'm sure it was. That picture so impressed me that I wasn't going to forget it. And when I saw it on the front page of the New York Times, I thought, that is my picture. And why was I so stupid? Because there were a number of pictures like that. I could have just pocketed one, you know, without the guy watching me. But my standing there and looking at it, I'm sure I looked a little bit shocked, and he was also shocked that I would find out.
Now, you started to tell me how you knew that you guys would have been some of the first guys in the invasion of Japan.
After we had assembled at Camp Cook, we hadn't been in the camp even a week. And the order came down that we were to have a large assembly meeting with the general out in the field. Those of us that were there were probably the 65th Armored Infantry Battalion. All of us had half tracks, and in the actual invasion, tanks would join us. Anyway, the general had a stand that he could stand on with loudspeakers. And so he said, "I'll tell you the good news first." He said, "The good news is the Army has deactivated this division, and you're all going to go home." And of course, we all cheered. And then he said, "Now, the bad news is, fortunately, you do not have to experience it." He told us generally that we were to invade a certain shore area of Japan, the mainland. And he said, "Before we leave here today, your captains have the actual invasion orders in a packet, and they're going to show it to you and read it to you." So each captain of every outfit did that, and when our captain opened it, he said, "I guess I might as well tell you in the beginning that the odds of your surviving, either wounded or being killed, are probably 70%, and only maybe 30% of you will be able to continue fighting in the invasion." And he said, "The only reason we can say that to you is because we know that the Japanese will fight to the end if we invade their homeland." And he said, "I'm going to show you your individual areas of attack, and I'm going to show you what routes you were to follow if you got on the land itself." And so they showed us all that. We went to our barracks, and they said, "You will be processed for discharge." Oh, by that time, the captain was so concerned about Morris getting so depressed, he made a decision to do what he could to help it. I think he thought I was afraid to go to Japan. That wasn't what I was afraid of. I was having these nightmares, and I was depressed. And in order to help me, he transferred me out of this infantry division to the division finance office. They gave me a rating of a sergeant. So my last experience in the 20th Armored Division was auditing all the payroll lists, but never during any of the time I was in the service did anybody even talk to me about, "Why are you depressed? And you know, what are you afraid of?" Yeah. And he knew that I was not the kind of a guy that got afraid of anything. Anyway, because I had a sergeant's rating, I thought, "Wow, this is terrific." So in college, I joined the reserves to preserve the sergeant's rating. I went to Drake University in Des Moines. My senior year, I joined the reserves, and I started attending the meetings. I started teaching school for 1 year, and the next year, I got a letter from Truman. It said, "You are hereby called to serve your country by reporting to Fort Hood, Texas." I didn't think that was such a bad idea, but our superintendent of schools thought it was terrible. And he drove me into the headquarters in Des Moines and said, "You can't take this fellow. He's teaching. We just started." And the colonel just looked at him, "I'm sorry, but there are no excuses. If he's on this list, he has to go." So I went to Korea.
Yes, and you would be awarded the Bronze Star in Korea, but timing is everything. Your arrival there was delayed because of a bout of appendicitis in Texas that put you in the hospital for almost a week. As a result, you didn't go over with your buddies, and you got there a little later. And maybe that appendicitis saved your life, because you received some pretty jarring news after you arrived in Korea.
The guy who was sort of the harbor master looked at my papers, and he said, "Oh, you go to headquarters. You have to go back up to the front." And he said, there's a little train here. It's original train, operates in Korea. Any soldier has a right to get on the train and ride free. I got on the train, and I got to see the countryside of Korea, which is, it looks very primitive. The houses are primitive, and everything is primitive. The train stopped at every little village. And at every little village, Koreans were right by the train track with peanuts and apples, two things I really loved. So I kept getting the peanuts and apples. We didn't go to Seoul because Seoul was actually being taken by the North Koreans at that time. So anyway, at the end of the train, I guess I got a ride with some Jeep or some truck to where headquarters was. And so I reported to the headquarters, and I showed my papers, and some guy said, you have to go over to the Quonset here where the general is. So I went in, and the general was, I think his name was Walker. He was smoking a cigar, and he was holding a miniature dachshund. Yeah. And he was walking back and forth. And my first order in Korea was to get him a cup of coffee. So I got him a cup of coffee and handed it to him. About that time, he started swearing at the colonel, who was standing at a raised desk with a big map. And he was in charge of giving orders for the movement of any unit. The general swore. He said, are you going to wait until we get captured? What in the hell's the matter with you? We're supposed to be the first people out of this area. By that time, the machine guns were getting louder. I thought, wow, that would be a terrible experience. I have just arrived. We're going to be arrested. We're going to be captured. Thank God we weren't. But anyway, we finally got out of there. So after a week or so, I was in headquarters, and I was in information and education, and I was assigned to write the newspaper for all the American troops in Korea. But anyway, I wanted to find out how my buddy was. I knew what outfit he went to, so I called there and asked if you could get a message to him. He checked, and he said, I'm sorry. He died one day after he arrived. He was killed. I thought, oh, man. I could have been right there with him. So I feel I've been very lucky in my experiences in the Army. I nearly got killed in Germany when an MP came up to our half track, and he had a grease gun. We call them burp guns. He was twisting it on his shoulder and pulled the trigger, and the bullets went right by my ear. I thought I was hit, and I stopped for a minute. I thought, well, am I going to stop breathing? He was scared to death that he had killed me.
Well, is that your explanation, that you're still here, that you saw everything you saw and lived through everything? Is it just sheer luck, or what do you think?
No, it's not sheer luck. My mother is a simple French Catholic woman. She was raised in an area where there were no churches or anything, and the family, I guess there were about seven kids, and all her mother used to teach the kids is learn to say the rosary. So I found out after I got back that my mom drove everybody crazy. She wouldn't do anything but pray the rosary. And there were times when she'd say, it's very important that you pray for his safety. And so the times that I came close to probably being killed is when she got the message, you know. So I was saved by the rosary. And my mom prayed it constantly. From the time I went in the first time, the second time, it really nearly broke her down to being immobile, like with depression, at the thought of me being killed.
Well, I know we're about out of time here, but I don't want to forget to say thank you for serving our country, and thank you for sharing authentically from your experience. And I'm so grateful that you're able to share something. You know, we think about Purple Hearts and guys who come back without a leg, or they've got a bullet wound or a scar that we can see. But so many came home with scars that no one could see, and you were sharing some of that very transparently with us. I think it's important for all of us to hear that. In light of that, is there some advice or some wisdom you can share with people who have been coming back from our current wars in similar states, or those like you who it's been 70 years, but it's still a battle with PTSD? Is there something you've learned or you've experienced that you think could help others?
After my second tour to Korea, I became a pacifist. I just said, war is insanity. When I realized how terrible the war was for the guys and how many ways they were injured and how many had PTSD, I began to wonder how can we keep subjecting our American men and women to this kind of trauma, because they're coming back and they're sick for the rest of their life. I realized PTSD, how bad it is, because it generally weakens you. Your whole immune system, psychological and physical immune system, is weakened. So any other things that add to it can trigger a real depression or another illness. So as I heard about all these guys coming back, I just started praying for them. I thought, this is the worst thing we could do to our young people. I just feel terrible about young American men and women having to go to wars like that.
One more question I don't want to miss out on, and I don't know what your answer is. That's why I asked the question. You told us how you stumbled across the Dachau concentration camp. There are still people who were prisoners there, who are alive, survivors of that camp. Have you ever had the chance to meet a survivor of that camp, someone who was held there? And if so, what was that like?
After I moved to California, maybe 20-some years ago, I've been here about 30 years, I was watching a TV program that says Missing Persons. They started talking about, they were looking for an American soldier who was the first person to arrive at the Dachau concentration camp. I said, wow, I was the first guy there, I think. So anyway, they said this soldier came up to the camp and he had a little American flag and he handed somebody the American flag. And they told me when it happened. It happened according to the time that I actually did this. But when they said he had an American flag, I thought, I didn't have an American flag. Nobody had an American flag. And I thought, well, it's not me. Anyway, they ended up by explaining why did they want to find this guy. It was a group of ex-prisoners from the Dachau concentration camp in the New York area. I guess they met every year to celebrate their freedom, and they wanted to meet this soldier. They said, whoever it is, they're going to bring him to New York, and he will be a part of our anniversary celebration. I never got to see them, I've seen some old people in this area here that have been in concentration camps. And I'm always amazed at how good they look, in spite of how ravaged their body and their nervous system must have been. I'm amazed at the recuperative ability of a human being. It's unbelievable to me how we do recover. And so that's all I can tell you about remembering the cow.
Well, you've told us quite a bit, and we wouldn't have heard it anywhere else. And who knows? Maybe this program airing on all of our Hometown Heroes affiliates might lead to an opportunity for you to meet with someone who was there that day in April of 1945. Richard Morris of San Luis Obispo, California, has been our guest today. You'll find a few more of his stories on the extended podcast version of the show at hometownheroesradio.com. I'm Paul Effler, hoping you'll join us again next time, and reminding you once more that freedom is not free.